Well, my name is Gatsby from Pong. I am the founder of the Gatsby TV app, which is a app you can use for recommending TV shows and movies. It also allows you to do universal search. I've had a pretty long career, I would say at least medium long career in technology, working at Apple, Cisco, Microsoft, and Google, both as an engineer and in product management. And yeah, I started this app because I want people to easily be able to find things on TV and share that content with friends.
Started, sustain, and succeed.
Hey, it's Kellen, and today on Diversified Game, I have the creator of the Gatsby app. His name happens just to be Gatsby from Pong, Ghana, right there. Stand up, y'all. In English, are in tree. Y'all talk that talk and let it be known who has the best apps, who has the best food. Because my audience, it's a big African audience. So, Gatsby, you're in the right place. Your app. Putting everything in one place, that's great. Being able to refer, and say, hey, watch this, that is great. I want to put it out there though that this is a legal app. This is no, Hellcat type venture. You went the legal route. You've worked for some of the biggest companies. When did you start this? Can you give us the game on when you started it, your partners, did you already have your venture capital? Are you still looking for those angels or venture vultures? Give us the game.
Yeah, no problem at all. So maybe I'll start off with the latter question and then get to the former one. So the latter question, essentially angels and investment. So yeah, as of today, there's no investment in the app or outside investment in the app whatsoever, which is a problem we're trying to solve. And we can talk about also on the podcast if you want, because I've spent quite a bit of time around Silicon Valley trying to get investment. And in the couple months that I've been here trying to do this, I've never met a Black investor actually at any of the big firms, which I think is interesting and also sad. So with that being said, all of the money put into the app so far has been from both the pockets of myself and my partner. His name is Michael Fickle. He's a co-founder in the app. I met him while I was an undergrad, and he's been a good friend of mine ever since. Like they say, you kind of do business with the people you know, the people you trust, and he's someone that I trust with anything really, and have a lot of respect for him. So in terms of when I started the app, basically this was an idea that germinated, or at least the seedling of it, was years ago, where essentially I had a personal problem, like millions of people. You come home after work and you say to yourself, hey, I want to watch something on TV with my family members after dinner but before bed. And I always sort of felt like that whole process of, going back and forth with my partner at the time was a little contentious. We'd always kind of be like, I want to watch this, I want to watch that. And then eventually we'd always turn on Friends, which honestly, it's like I know every episode of the Friends and the Office, and it's like the only show in the world that I really don't like, but I know everything about those two shows. And so yeah, I kind of wanted to fix that. How is it that we have Hulu, Netflix, HBO Max, all this other stuff, and we still can't seem to find stuff to watch on TV? So yeah, I've been working on it for a few years now, and we have a couple thousand users, and we're looking to grow.
Well, and I used it, and one of them, because I don't watch a ton of TV, I do, I represent YouTubers and different type of people. And so YouTube is like, if I'm going to watch a screen, it's the only thing I'm a lot of times watching, unless on a plane, right? And I said, I clicked something. I said, I didn't buy this, but I said, maybe my phone is connected to somebody else's account. And I just, I was happy. And then I tried something else because I wanted to watch Hamilton and I couldn't because the Disney access I had no longer. When you created this in your mind, and I'm trying to have this be a teachable moment for like the 14-year-old who has a different idea like you do. I say you have to kind of be crazy to be an inventor or be a futurist. What did your, friends and family say when you wanted to create this since you didn't have the venture capital, lined up? What did they say? Were you loco and la cabeza, crazy in the head?
Yeah, so I think like a lot of people, at least the people who are very close to me, were all very supportive. I think that that comes from, just essentially my upbringing and the people who are around me, just always sort of having confidence and being really positive. I think sometimes people can be too positive, right? They let their friends and family members get away with things that they probably shouldn't. But I think in this respect, it was all well deserved, because I think anyone that's really known me or been close to me knows that whenever I say something, it's going to happen. So it wasn't a matter of, okay, if he's going to do this, it's when he's going to do this. So that was the first part. Then I think the other piece of it, for me, was really just kind of sitting there, and like you said, like for the 14-year-old who's out there, saying to myself, and maybe I should take you back. When I was kind of first thinking about the app, I was working at a job where I was making quite a lot of money. I was making more money than 99% of Americans. I could have sat there and sat in corporate America and eventually, just via my salary, stock options, et cetera, become a multimillionaire just by working at a high tech company. And so it was a very safe route. It's a very good route. I'd be able to take care of my family. I'd even be able to get generational wealth just on that. But for me, it wasn't just about settling. And I think that's a big thing with me just in life, is not settling. Although you may be making a lot of money, although things might be going well, for me, it's always, how do things get better? How do I become more independent? How do I do more for other people? And so for me, it was really about actually, in terms of that, saying, hey, I've got this cushy job, but I want more. I'm going to go against the grain and I'm going to go strike out on my own. And I think a lot of where that comes from is just having overall confidence in myself that, again, just like the people around me, it's not, is this or if this is going to be successful. It's more so when this is going to be successful. And I think that comes from, again, sort of self-confidence, which I think that within our generation and generations that are coming up, like the Gen Zers, et cetera, there's a lot of mental health issues and actually lack of self-confidence and awareness in ourselves. And I think that's something that, we sort of need to change, because there are a lot of wonderful people out there and smart people out there that aren't doing really what they want to do because they want to stay in that safe or cushy job or do what their parents told them, et cetera. And this kind of reminds me actually of like a one random thing that I'll sort of say as a last thing to kind of wrap up the answer to this question. Is there's an investor there named Peter Thiel. He was the first person to put money into Facebook when Facebook was a relatively small company and people had not really heard of it. And he's pretty well known in Silicon Valley. He helped co-found PayPal with Elon Musk, and he's also helped with a few other ventures out that you probably heard of, like LinkedIn, et cetera, right? It's all part of this PayPal mafia. If no one, if you're listening to this and you haven't heard of PayPal mafia, look it up. It's a very interesting group of people, including Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, and some others. And the point I'm trying to get to here is one thing that he said that I thought was interesting is he said that for whatever reason, when he's dealing with founders and thinking about investing in a lot of folks, one thing that he's tend to notice is that a lot of people who are founders tend to have they kind of call like autistic capabilities. And he said, it's kind of really sad that in this day and age that the only people that will kind of strike out on their own and go against the grain are those people that they would say are like, quote unquote, on the spectrum, right? Or think differently. And it sort of begs this question, like, why is it that only people who may have some sort of mental health thing going on or autism, whatever it may be, are the only ones with the guts enough to like go ahead and just try to strike out on their own and have that self-confidence? And so I think that's really interesting and something, people should think about when they're thinking about putting someone down or not supporting someone, et cetera. It's like, why is it that we're so against going out on your own and trying something different?
Well, you know what I like to say? Business is a lot like dating, could also be like making love and how you get to know someone, right? But if you weren't the 6'7" basketball player, 200 something pounds, and let's just say ugly guys rule the world, you got all the confidence in the world because it's just a numbers game and you just go. And just like when you're pitching out there now, it's like, okay, I might not be the biggest right now. I might not have everything that you guys want as far as the users, but we're going to keep pushing and we're going to knock this out because we keep getting a positive response and we know we're solving a problem. So I love it, being part of a venture fund, very small member here in Florida Funders here in South Florida. You know, it's all about who you know and what problem you're solving. You're solving a problem that, I mean, today, a Facebook, a LinkedIn, anybody could pick up and this would benefit their users. And then they can add their little twist. For the venture capitalists out there, are you looking to sell all out and say, hey, I'm done. This is my invention. Now I'm going to move on. Or is this something where it's going to be a lifelong project like a Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, where I'm going to stay on and, ride this out for life?
Yeah, no, 100%. And in what you're saying, I guess, again, and kind of talking to the 14-year-old or person who's listening to this, that's kind of thinking about striking out on their own and they don't have the self-confidence. The other thing I was thinking as you're talking is about sports. You're talking about the 6'7" guy, et cetera. I love sports. I probably used to watch a little too much. Now I've kind of, because I'm working on an app, I'm a lot less involved in it. But what it reminds me of is a football player, for those who are unaware, a quarterback named Lamar Jackson, who plays for the Baltimore Ravens. And one thing that was interesting to me about his specific career is here was a guy who is one of the top recruits in the state of Florida. I think he's out of South Florida, somewhere in Miami, Fort Lauderdale area. Really highly touted recruit at quarterback. Then he ended up going to Louisville, even though he was highly recruited, which is interesting. I guess I'm pretty sure he could have gone to the U for all you South Florida fans, but he ended up at Louisville, which isn't known as a football school; it's known as a basketball school. And I think part of the reason why is because when you look at Lamar Jackson, he's not quite the right height at the time, not quite the right color, doesn't have quite the right skills, but it's pretty undeniable from his high school record that he was a great player. And then what ends up happening at Louisville is he goes to Louisville and he wins the Heisman as, I believe, a sophomore, which at the time he's one of the youngest people, I think, outside of, I can't remember who else, Baker Mayfield, one of those types of players. Or no, it was, what's his name at Texas A&M? His name is eluding me right now, but the quarterback went to the Cleveland Browns, who got in all that trouble. But basically, these guys are sort of like the youngest to have won the Heisman. And so Lamar Jackson wins the Heisman, great player. Louisville is the best it's ever been at football. And for whatever reason, still scouts, the NFL, et cetera, they don't think he's, a number one pick in the NFL draft. And so he ends up getting picked late in the first round. And for those who are watching football nowadays, this guy is absolutely killing it, multiple MVPs. He's got passing records, he's got rushing records, et cetera. And so what I'm trying to say at the end of the day is, although there may be a bunch of experts, whether they be NFL scouts, investors, whatever it may be, watching, sometimes people are pretty undeniable. And for whatever reason, because they don't pattern match, he's not 6'7", he's not a pocket passer, he's not, to be quite honest, at least at the time, he's not a white guy. He didn't match these patterns, and so they overlooked him. And people in the NFL are paying a dear price when it comes to playing against them. So for those of you all who aren't having success, think about these stories like the Lamar Jackson story or even the Michael Jordan story. Third pick, are you kidding me? And again, he didn't pattern match because Sam Bowie was this big center and all these things, so they picked Sam Bowie over him and whatnot. And then again, NFL or NBA teams paid the price for not drafting Michael Jordan one or two. So yeah, it is what it is.
And you had mentioned something, and you talk about the being on the spectrum and how, genius comes in all forms. It's just amazing. We even look at like Stephen Hawking. I found out right before I turned 40 years ago, oh, I'm dyslexic. It took a long time to get a doctor to actually test you. But I still got laughed at because people were like, how do you do a master's degree and all these things and you do it quick? And I said, well, it's my superpower. It allows me, dyslexic, ADHD, but it's probably in remission. Do you have any of that background? Because I think my mother would have never allowed me to get tested. This is the 80s. You're going to be in the special class with the kid with the helmet on, and you're not going to excel, right? To where she would want me to be. But did you have any of that background of, in school, you thought different, or they said, hey, this guy has ADHD or anything like that? Because I tell kids they use that now, they get a check and they use it as a crutch. And I'm like, no, that's your cape. That's your mask. That's what's gonna make you fly, baby.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I think in terms of neurodiversity, I think that's one of the problems that we have in the world overall. A lot of testing, a lot of education is based on rote memorization, which is a way of showing intelligence, yes. But there are multiple ways of showing intelligence. One of the things, again, I was very involved in sports when I was a youngster, like most kids in America. And one thing I've always sort of thought is that when you're playing any sport, football, basketball, soccer, whatever it may be, I think Messi is a great example of this. So Lionel Messi is not the fastest, strongest, tallest, biggest, et cetera, soccer player in the world by any means. But what's interesting to me, and Michael Jordan too, I mean, they're bigger players, they're faster players, et cetera, from a physical standpoint. One thing that's interesting to me about these players, though, is that they always seem to make the right decisions at the right time and ultimately get the goal or get the basket, whatever it may be, pick your sport. And so for me, one thing that's been interesting to me about sports is actually me personally, I'm actually physically a lot. I don't know, I am kind of like the fast, strong person, to be quite honest. And what surprises me sometimes is that you could be the fastest, you could be the strongest, but that doesn't mean you're the best. It's because in sports, there's like a different type of intelligence, right? Like making the right pass, knowing when to take the shot, this type of thing, which can't be measured by an SAT or something like that. And so for me, I always sort of think to myself is like, when it comes to standardized testing, how can we measure different types of intelligence that people might have? The kid who can get a 1600 on the SAT or 2400, I think is a perfect score now, isn't necessarily the kid that can, throw the game-winning touchdown pass in crunch time, whatever it may be. And they may know everything about how the play is going to develop, whatever. You can even give them the physical tools. And again, there's a different type of intelligence that comes there. So yeah, I think that's one thing, figuring out how do we test for different types of intelligence. For me specifically, I actually have dyslexia too. And I think the thing that it did for me is I was always okay at school. I wasn't necessarily bad. I wasn't necessarily the greatest. I was actually put into, and I'm pretty sure almost every school district has this, right? I came from a low income background, single parent household, all these things. Basically, as bad it gets, lived in the projects, public housing, all like literally like the story. Like, if anyone wants to talk about the story, I have the story. And so, one thing that's interesting to me about that is that basically, even though I had all that going for me, I had a few teachers that were like, hey, like, even though this kid is kind of having trouble, I used to get in trouble all the time too. That was another thing, acting out in class, always making jokes, always talking. I wouldn't say I was ADHD, but definitely had a lot of those qualities. And I even say to this day, I still have issues in conversations with people, knowing when to butt in and start talking, because if someone says something that's really exciting to me, I'll just start talking. I just like kind of interrupt, and I don't know what it is about my brain, whatever, but I just can't stop myself. I know this is a problem. But where I'm going with this is one thing that I had, which I think was great for me, is that there was a teacher or two that said, hey, we think this person is gifted. I don't know. And as an adult now, I actually try to think to myself, and I have no children, at least I'm aware of right now. I try to think to myself, like, what is it that like an 8-year-old or 10-year-old, whatever, at this young age, what can I show an adult that lets this adult know, like, okay, this person is someone who's gifted or interesting, whatever it may be. I still haven't figured that out. But and again, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but I remember I was texting one of my friend's dads, and this was a person who knew me when I was about 8, 10 years old. And he texted me, we're just talking about random things, and he said to me, I always knew you would do well. And that was really striking to me because, again, I'm like, how would you know that an 8 or 10 year old has these attributes to do well? But yeah, with that being said, I think the thing that really kind of sticks out to me about that is having teachers that really believed in me, although at times my grades didn't necessarily show that I should be believed in. And then, secondly, going back to the dyslexia part of it, I think the thing that neurological differences do for people is because I knew reading at times could be very difficult. I knew rote memorization could be very difficult. I worked on other qualities myself, like my ability to speak to people, like my ability to get people on board on a message or an idea, like these sort of things. And I became more social, maybe in a way to compensate for some of the things that I lacked. But at the end of the day, like my differences have made me successful. And like I said, an SAT doesn't test for how social you are. An SAT doesn't test for if you're able to get people to believe in an idea. An SAT doesn't test for your leadership. So going back to what I was saying before is we need to figure out more ways to test for different types of intelligence so we can get a real full picture of how and what a person truly is.
Hello, everyone. Join us on an exciting journey with Explore the World Cameroon. London and Sydney go take you explore Cameroon, the heart of Africa. Experience the vibrant culture, nature, and traditions from Yaoundé Market to rainforest adventures. Every page is a new discovery. Join the Cameroonian food, music, and wildlife with our explorers. This book is a true celebration of Cameroon spirit. Get your copy now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and through your library and bookstores via Ingram Spark. Don't miss this adventure.
And you being an engineer, And you know, also on the development side, I don't know what part Mike and you guys, you know, split. Usually one person is doing front end, other person's on the back end, or you got that person who's just handling the business, and then, you know, whoever's the tech side. But most people in tech, you know, don't even talk. I've worked in Seattle in a few companies, and you go in, hey, how you doing? And you might get a and you really have, you know, you don't want to bother anybody in today's time because you don't want to be canceled. Yeah. But it's you're very just you're out there. So are you the technical guy doing, you know, the coding? What part do you love to play in this development?
Yeah, no problem. So Mike Fickle, generally from Gatsby TV, who's my business partner, he tends to work on a lot of the business side of things. Me myself, it's not that I'm not business minded. My undergraduate degree was in economics. I'm working on two master's degrees, one at Stanford University, an engineering degree, and then my second one is also a engineering degree, which is in data science. And so for me, I feel like I've got a perfect pitch. I've got an arsenal of various different things, whether it be like design, whether it be engineering, whether it be business. But I think for when you look at people on a team, you say, what can I do to augment my strengths and weaknesses? And I sort of felt like, honestly, the business side doesn't really get me excited. And so I said, okay, let me find someone who can work on that. I'm really excited about solving user problems, UI, UXs, creating solutions, the technical side. And then we have a few engineers that help with sort of the back end and front end work. And so overall, within our small team, we've got a lot of different people working on things. But one of the things I actually want to, I guess, shed a light on. One thing that you said is one thing, and one reason why I started Gatsby TV app is because for me, I'm a millennial. I've kind of grown up in this generation where, you know, iPad was introduced, iPhone was introduced, Facebook was introduced. I'm sort of in this like time where like I just barely remember the world without the internet, but not really. And then obviously, I know the world with the internet. And for me, it's very interesting because right now I'm at Stanford. And I tried to think about like how people are developing. And I think a lot of people are actually trying to blame COVID for far too much because I think COVID didn't necessarily create trends, in my opinion. It just accelerated certain trends. That's what it did. Where I always feel, and specific to our conversation right now, there was sort of this trend for young people to stop being social. This was kind of what was going on, right? And I think it comes a lot from, and this is again me who's not a parent, but someone who goes to restaurants. One thing I would see all the time, and you see all the time, you usually see all the time, is you go to a restaurant, there's a whole family eating, and then the youngest person in the family, some of the younger ones, are just sitting on their iPad with their headphones in, watching the iPad at dinner. And the crazy thing to me is that in any culture, you go to Haiti, you go to India, you go to China, United States, Brazil, you name it. If you're at home in your house and one person is sitting on an iPad with the headphones in at dinner, like that would be blasphemous. That's like so unbelievably rude that like someone would be like, look, like this is ridiculous, right? So why is it okay to do that in a restaurant but not at home? It's ridiculous to me. But the thing I will say is that when you've got this sort of iPad generation, what's slowly going on is that, well, let's say you and I, we want to meet in South Florida, right? We're most likely going to say, let's go meet to eat. And the thing that I think people forget is that eating isn't necessarily about sustenance. It's also about the social aspect of it. That's why, hey, let's get lunch, let's get coffee, let's get dinner, this type of thing. So what you do is now you have this child who's 8, 10 years old, 6, whatever you name it. The one of the biggest social pieces of just being a human, you've now made them believe that it's a singular event in which when you're around a lot of people, you can still kind of be on your own. This 6-year-old then becomes 8, then becomes 10, then becomes 14, 18, 22, you name it. And now they are sort of trained to no longer socialize because some of the biggest social aspects of our life are no longer a social thing. So one thing I've sort of noticed that really bothers me when I go around campus here is that generally, when you pass someone, no one says hi to you. It's almost like everyone wants to avoid you. And I swear to you, someone do some sort of research on this. Go anywhere in the world, blah, blah, and like, or at least in the United States, I should say, because this is partially a cultural thing. And you'll see people, they smile at you, they wave at you, you know, whatever, even if they don't know you. And then start to go to college campuses. people between 18 and 22 years old right now and see, measure within that 30-minute time frame and just random street and in that 30-minute time frame on a college campus, how many random students say hi to you? And it'll be shocking how few are actually that open to being social. And I think that this is a really, really big problem in the United States, and it's also happening elsewhere to a point where the Chinese government is even putting limits on how much time people can play video games and all these various things. So, really like these types of systems. But the thing is I can get why they're doing this, right? Because you're like, look, like people are just like, they're only really in tune with the screen. They only know how to socialize with the screen. So at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is that I think part of the reason why maybe someone like myself, yourself, others can now in a lot of ways be more successful is because the skill of being social, talking to people, again, evangelizing people, get proselytizing people, getting people on an idea is becoming less and less so a skill that people have and a skill that people even at best universities, Stanford, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, you name it, have. And so what are we going to do if in the future every single one of our leaders coming from these universities can't talk to people, right? It's like we'll have a US president in 20 years, which is, probably doesn't do interviews, like, you never really hear from in a lot of ways. And I think it's a scary future to be in.
I kind of love it because even with like the VR YouTubers and again, I this is the space that I live in and tell people you're gonna live forever. At least you're, we can take your audio, we can take your image, we can type it, we can have AI, keep up. It is what it is. We and it benefits me, so I'm very biased. But when I go to like Asian countries like Japan, and it's the quietest train ride you've ever taken, and my kids and my wife are like, nobody's talking. That girl just bumped into you, pushed you back. You think you're at the club. You get the bump, but they don't even say excuse me. But it's not rude. It would be rude actually to talk. So, the future. You travel enough and you see, okay, I love being in African nations. I'm a Sierra Leonean. You see Cameroon back there. You see America and Mexico. Those are all my countries. But in Africa, you would get beat if you didn't talk. So and don't bring your headphones anywhere around the elders. With what you're doing and the success that you're gonna have in the future, we're claiming it like that because I'm gonna outside of this, send you some places in Seattle that benefited me when we were there, because you're not too far from there. And I'm from California. My pops went to Stanford. So I understand, like, if you can go to a school like that, there's different avenues you can get. My grades, I ain't paying for no Stanford education. He said, I'm not paying for any education when it looks like this. I had the Theo conversation. I got it right eventually, right? And then I could pay for it myself. But I want to know, what is your community give back that you are doing or that you plan on doing with this app? Because this app, I mean, you can send messages. I sent you one. You'll see it later. Let the people know the community side of it outside of what they think it is and what you're doing and how it's going to impact the world.
Yeah, no problem at all. So essentially, there's a few things going on here. There's a short-term goal with the app, and then there's a longer personal goal. So the short-term goal with the Gatsby TV app is that within the app, the whole idea of it is you can search for TV shows and movies. And it kind of comes from this offline conversation we have, where at least the thing I noticed in the real world that happens or an offline world is that you're at lunch or you're texting a friend or you're at a dinner party. There's usually a couple things that come up. How are you doing? How are the kids? How's life? How's work? One thing that comes up fairly often is what are you watching? Or I just watched this thing, et cetera. And then people kind of get into it. And this is more of like the informal, less interrogation part of the conversation generally. And I think it's a really great way for humans to sort of quote unquote, and I think, going back to what I said about food being a social thing, it's a good way for people to break bread with people, right? Where you say, hey, what are you watching? Oh, I think this show's good. I think this show's bad. Oh, I can't wait for the next one. Oh, they messed up season 8 of Game of Thrones, et cetera. So with that being said, my app essentially what it does is it allows people to take this offline conversation. You say, you know what, you've never seen Game of Thrones before. Let me send you this recommendation in a Gatsby TV app. And next time you pull up your Apple TV, because our app is available on iOS, it's available on Android, and we're now developing and launching the Apple TV version of the app this summer, is you can say, okay, what are the things I've watched in the past when you look at the app? And then you can see the things that have been recommended to you. And the whole idea is that you watch that recommendation. And then actually sends a note to the person who recommended it to you that says, "Oh, hey, Kellen has watched Game of Thrones." And then it starts this sort of conversation. Oh, yeah, what do you think about Game of Thrones? Like, what did you think about, the Red Wedding or something like that? And so what I'm trying to do is bring conversations that are offline online and then bring them back offline. Because I think that a very integral part of the world that we have to live in going into the future is we are becoming far too online. And I think that there is a lot to it, right? Like, I don't enjoy traveling for just one meeting. I don't enjoy, sending mail in the mail and it taking 5 days for it to get there, right? Like, I do like the instantaneous, like, Zoom conversations, text messages, et cetera. But we're losing a piece of us is if everything, absolutely everything is online. Before, you want to eat, you had to go to a restaurant. Now you have a DoorDash. Before, you wanted to meet a partner, you had to go to the bar, you had to go to church. Now you just get on Tinder, et cetera. Before, if you wanted to grab something shopping-wise, a pair of pants, whatever, you go to mall, now you go on Amazon. So again, kind of going back to what I said before in your example of Japan, is now we live in a world where if you really don't want to socialize, you can be an active contributive member of society and not have to talk to a single person ever, which I think is very interesting. And so for me, part of the app, the community give back, is allowing people to say, like, I had an offline conversation, I've now put it online, but now I'm now prepared to have offline conversations again because I have something I can at least break bread with and talk about, and it's relaxing to me, which is talking about these apps or talking about these TV shows and movies. And so within the Gatsby TV app, what we're trying to do in terms of trying to spur this in-person conversation is having meetups where we say, for instance, oh, anyone who wants to watch Dune 2 at a movie theater, the Gatsby app is giving away free tickets. Go ahead and watch it with your friends. Go hang out in person. Go eat with them. Watch a movie and have that conversation. And oh yeah, recommended other TV shows and movies to people in the app. So that's sort of like the short term. It's like, how can we create offline and online experiences with an emphasis of offline in a way that's relaxing to people and they truly feel like they're part of community there. The long-term goal I have with this is one thing that is really interesting to me is the United States, we have millions of Black and Latino people. And I think that it's you'd have, or most people would have a very hard time to say, okay, here's a Black billionaire in America. Let's say you have a group of 100 people. You name a Black billionaire in America who hasn't made their money from sports or music. I would say most people wouldn't know who that person is. They wouldn't even be able to give you a name. Some Black people would be able to give you a few names, but I think a lot of other people in the audience wouldn't know who those people are. And for me, that's really enlightening, but also shameful because we say we've come so far in society when it comes to Black excellence, Latino excellence, excellence of minorities. But it's very at least apparent to me that we have so much further to go. There are far too many Black people in the United States for us to barely be able to name a Black billionaire who hasn't dribbled a ball or sung a song. I think that's crazy to me, especially in a country that's 250 years old and who has tens of millions of Black and Latino people for sure. And so for me, one of the things I've always wanted to build is a school that actually helps sort of I guess develop some of this Black talent in the United States. Because I don't think that Black people aren't talented. I don't think that's the problem whatsoever. And I don't think that Black people aren't smart. I don't think that's the problem whatsoever. But there's something going on in our society which we still haven't quite fixed yet, in which, unlike the Asian, Jewish, broader white communities, et cetera, we haven't been able to have that success. And I think that a lot of the problem is we try to do it at the very end. So we say, okay, now we're going to have affirmative action when this person is 18, or we're going to do some sort of job program when they're 22, whatever it may be. But I don't think that that's the right place to start. We have to start when these people are young. Going back to what I said before about being identified as a talented person at 6 or 8 or 10, blah, blah. It's like we have to start in elementary schools. We have to start in the kindergartens. We have to start in the pre-K. And like interest when it comes to money, everything compounds. So if you can start them with a really good beginning, a really good base, things will end up working out in the future. So they don't need any of these programs later on in their life. They'll be able to basically stand on their own too. So the school thing's a big part for me.
Awesome. I love that. And, you know, if we go back to Africa and we talk, I mean, school is here, but We are seeing from Little John to, you can name some of Michael Blackson creating schools in Africa, and it's a lot cheaper. It's a lot easier. It's so much easier to build in Africa versus the permits that you need just to add on a garage in America. Don't get me started because I don't want the NSA looking at you, but they know how I feel. Tell me your thoughts, though, when you talk about, the Black billionaires and the people they would know. When was the last time David Stewart did an interview? When, Robert Smith, for whatever reason he did, because I don't want Pocket Watching with JT to say why he did the interview with, Burn Your Leisure podcast. Why they don't talk. Black billionaires and many billionaires don't talk. But you see a Mark Cuban will do a TV show. Trump, if you love him or hate him, did a TV show. Even Al Haymon, who made Mayweather, had a big part, I should say, as his advisor. He will not do an interview for the last 40 years. Trust me, I've begged. I've asked his friends. He ain't doing it. So our people who are at this most successful level, sometimes outside of entertainment, won't talk versus the folks who will tell you get a clean CID number or do some type of scam and tell you how rich they are when they're not debt free even. So, that's just my talking point. Maybe when you're talking to them out there, you can have some more people talk when you do run into them. Let the people know. I want people to know because I want them to go download the app and I can have you on all day. Let the people know, how can we help you? What do we need to do? Well, download the app. It's free. Share it. What else can we do? If there's any type of any other fund or events that we can support you, please let it be known.
Yeah, so I would say, I was sort of thinking before we got on the line here about something that struck me as very interesting. It was a conversation through a conversation. So I was working somewhere, I was involved. I don't know P. Diddy personally, but I was in a situation where someone I know was interviewing him about basically investing in a company. And this person was a white person. And the person came back to me and they said, hey, this is what Diddy said. And I was like, okay, interesting. And one thing he said that really resonated with me actually is he didn't want to invest in this. It was like a social app. He didn't want to invest in it because he said, look, I get on all of these apps, whether it be Instagram, whether it be Twitter, whatever it may be. And what I'm doing is I'm creating a lot of value for Elon Musk or for Mark Zuckerberg, whatever it may be, because I'm bringing a lot of African-American, Latino people, Black people in general, onto the platform. And on these platforms, a lot of the tastemakers, a lot of the drivers of culture are actually Black people. And I don't know if a lot of your viewers or you remember this, but there was this whole controversy last year or 2 years ago with TikTok, because all of the TikTok dances were being done with like Black kids. And then they were never the ones who are accruing all the value and money. Basically it was the white kids who were like redoing the same dance. And then they were the ones getting famous. And so I think at the end of the day, one of the things that really strikes me as odd, and this kind of goes back to our Black billionaire thing, is that, in terms of tastemaking, in terms of driving culture, not only in the United States, but elsewhere, African-Americans are at the vanguard and the precipice of this. And so what I would say, and Black people in general, Latino people, excuse me. So what I would say is that other than downloading the app, sharing it with people, et cetera, is start being tastemakers on it. The culture, like bring your culture, go ahead, upload videos within the app. There's sort of like this TikTok like feed in which you as an influencer can create your own channel, put stuff on the feed, et cetera. And I think at the end of the day, that's really all the billions that Mark Zuckerberg, Cuban, Elon, you name it, all this money that they're making is off the backs of Black people, like it's always sort of been in the United States, where it's like Black people do a lot of work, but people who are non-Black seem to make all the money. And so this is an opportunity here where you have a Black person, which is an owner of the platform. And now I'm just looking, maybe it's weird to say this, but I'm looking to work off the backs of millions of Black people, say like, hey, like, if you're going to accrue money to someone, please do it to me. Because going back to what I said about the overall mission, I talked about the short-term mission, which is this offline online conversations. But I also talked about building these Black schools and schools for Black children specifically in order to help them at a very young age. And so even if you think like, hey, I'm giving my talent, I'm giving my money to this person, please also remember that this money will be given back to the community. And so it'll end up in your pockets in an indirect way, in some sort of ways. And that's my only ask.
Well, no, that's beautiful. And, you talk about the TikTokers and the influencers. Like I said, I'm going to be sharing this with some, but some of them don't get what they need because they do not have management just like your doctor. The stats show if your doctor looks like you, you're going to have better treatment. And for someone who is in that space, as well as a licensed sports agent, just so I can be legal here in the state of Florida when people need advice, you keep going to the same people. We got to go find, new arms. Because even in Africa, there's venture capital people who have chastised me saying, Kellen, why didn't you take that money? You get owned so you can own somebody else, my friend one time told me. And he has, taken the money and very, very successful. But I run my business kind of where I want to be free and I want to do what I want to do, like having conversations like this so others can get the game. That's the whole point of the show. So you guys can hear someone go down a journey that you want to go down, and maybe you reach out, but you got him on the Gatsby app because Gatsby is not on any other social media. I haven't found him on LinkedIn. I haven't found him on, anything else. So let the people know where they can find you, how they can find you if they do have a question, or maybe they even have a tip and say, my uncle, he wants to invest in this, or he wants to know more. Where can they get that game from you?
Yeah, no problem. So you can easily email me at gatsby@gatsby.tv, GATSBY. That's the easiest way to contact me. Yes, you're right. I'm not really on any social media. Like I said, I've worked in a lot of tech. And as they say, I think was it the great Biggie Small says, don't get high on your own supply. So I'm not really, I love tech, but I try to limit my tech as much as possible. It's a broader conversation we can talk about another day. And then yeah, we are also available. There is actually a TV underscore Gatsby, GATSBY, Instagram page. It's not too active, but we're gonna activate it a little more this summer. And so these are ways that you can reach us. And then lastly, on the app, obviously, if you go into the app and you message me, you'll get a message from me because I am, that is the real me in there. So Gatsby TV, download on iOS or the Google Play Store.
You guys have gotten the game, and when he started quoting Biggie, this is the difference between the first batch of millennials. Because my wife, she's like, young, a little younger, 3 years younger. She's like, you're not a millennial. I said, yeah, I'm the first batch. But the first time I heard what Biggie Small said, it was Scarface, such a romantic movie. I know, but that's what Frank told Tony, before he told him, don't be a hassa. But, you guys have gotten the game. Make sure, since you've gone through this far, that you like the game, that you subscribe to the game. I know more of you are listeners, but go over to the YouTube and give it some love. And most importantly, no matter how you're experiencing this, share the game with somebody. It will change their life. Y'all be blessed.
Are you tired of the violence? Tired of the injustice? Police brutality, rampant discrimination, lack of gun control in this failed bias socioeconomic experiment called America? Or maybe you need a break from the relentless grind and want to regain control of your destiny, your wealth, your health, and your purpose. DiversifiedGame.com has the right course for you. Prepare for my first trip to Africa. Looking to reconnect with your roots, start a new business, or just a fresh start. Africa, aka the motherland, is waiting. Don't let the Chinese and the Mzungus have the fun and also take over the motherland. From Cairo to Mombasa, from Dakar to Cape Town, Africa has something for everyone, from business opportunities to the most amazing people, safety, leisure, and landscapes. So opportunities abound. It is time for the diaspora to reconnect with their roots. Time to reconnect with the birthplace of humanity. Africa is the last frontier. Get your head in the game and reclaim your legacy. The writing is on the wall. Babylon is falling. Give up the stress, grind, and violence inflicted on our people on this continent and prepare for a journey of restoration and joy by connecting with the land of your ancestors. Check out our new course and kick off your adventure at diversifiedgame.com.